Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Betzalel Ben Mordechai, Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Harav Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we begin our program with our questions from our great JTFers, you know, the ideal situation for us at this point would be if we could convince people who disagree with us to debate us in front of live audiences. That's what we would really love to do. We would love to have myself and other JTF spokesmen debating in front of live audiences with people who disagree with us. And that's something that we actually are trying to do. I don't know if we're going to succeed in doing it, but we're trying to organize something like that. We need your prayers. Let's hope that we can get it going, because if we could have debates in front of live audiences and record it and put it on YouTube and put it on Facebook, and we would like to have the debates in English and in Hebrew, sometimes in English and sometimes in Hebrew, I think that that could potentially really be a very important new stage for our movement, that people really saw not only the presentation of our ideas, but also how we defend them against criticism and how our ideas stack up against the ideas of others. I think that would be really a big boost for JTF and for the Jewish people and for America and Israel and everything that we're fighting for. And I think the reason why we want to do it is because we saw in the last election for the Israeli Knesset that was held recently, no one opposed Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud from the right. From the right, no one opposed him. No one opposed him. Everyone ran as Netanyahu supporters. Everyone on the so-called right ran as Netanyahu supporters, including Baruch Marzel, who calls himself a Kahanist. Even he ran as a Netanyahu supporter, saying that, well, Netanyahu and the Likud, they're part of the nationalist camp, they're part of the right, they're part of the right-wing bloc, and we want them to win. And he refused to criticize Netanyahu and the Likud. That was true for Marzel, that was true for Naftali Bennett and the Jewish Home Party, Habayit HaYehudi in Hebrew. All the parties ran as Netanyahu supporters. So Netanyahu gets zero pressure from the right. All the pressure he gets is only from the left. And stupid Jews, and most Jews are stupid politically. When it comes to their survival, they are hopelessly stupid. Stupid Jews thought this is good, and they still think this is good. When we do a video criticizing a Netanyahu from the right, Jews right away get hysterical. It's going to hurt Israel. It's bad. How unbelievably idiotic can people be? This is the best thing you can do for Israel, is pressure Israel's government from the right not to give in. How could that hurt Israel? How could that possibly be bad for Israel? Now, the only criticism that Netanyahu gets from the right is from JTF. But JTF wasn't running in the elections. And JTF is in a difficult situation here, because I'm banned from going to Israel. I mean, we still reach thousands of people with our videos and with our Facebook pages and with everything else that we do. We still reach thousands of Israeli Jews with our message. But there is no political party or political entity that is going after Netanyahu or threatening him from the right. All the threats to him come from the left. And because he's weak and because he's not a true right winger, naturally that produces a policy that's disastrous. And so when he wanted to attack Iran in 2010, he wanted to attack Iran. But the left-wing generals and chief of staff and all the left-wing people that he appointed were all against an attack. Iran got off the hook. There was no attack on Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. And Iran is now on the verge, God forbid, of building nuclear bombs, and we're on the verge of this catastrophe because of Netanyahu's cowardly policies. And nobody condemns him and says, what the hell are you doing? What is going on here? What are you, crazy? Making speeches at a time when Iran's on the verge of building nuclear bombs, you have to act now. Nobody is saying that except for us. But in the election, There was no party to say that. There is no political party in Israel that says that. There is no political right-wing opposition to him. The only opposition he gets is from JTF's videos when it comes to Iran. He freezes all Jewish settlements for 6.5 years. The left-wing prime ministers, when they were in power, the number of Jews in Judea and Samaria tripled, quadrupled, because they didn't freeze Jewish settlements. But he is freezing Jewish settlements. He has hurt the Jewish settlement movement and has advanced the cause of a so-called Palestinian state in the most horrific way. He has a complete freeze on Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, Jerusalem. People who do build have to do it without the government's permission and without government assistance and with the government actually trying to stand in the way. So you have a terrible problem here. And nobody goes against him on this. Daniela Weiss, the big right-wing leader supposedly, was rallying behind him and saying we have to support him even though he's freezing the Jewish settlements. It's true he's freezing the Jewish settlements, but he's still better than the left. This is what she was saying. I mean, this is crazy. That's not true that he's better than the left. On the issue of settlements, he's not better than the left. The left allowed Jews to grow in Judea and Samaria, and the number of Jews living there were growing at a much faster pace when the left was in power. And he expelled hundreds of Jews from their homes, threw them out of their homes, destroyed Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, something that he still does to this day. Another issue where he's terrible, in which he's terrible on, is the Israeli Supreme Court, which is all left-wing. You have to be a left-wing traitor, a self-hating Jew, to sit on Israel's Supreme Court. Otherwise, you can't be appointed to the court. And Netanyahu supports the system of how judges are selected. You know how judges are selected for the Supreme Court in Israel? The judges select their own successors. The judges themselves select the new judges. So, of course, if all the judges are left-wing, they're going to select other left-wing judges. And so 95% of the judges on Israel's Supreme Court are from the far left. And Netanyahu has promised and has kept his... This is one promise he has kept. He broke all his promises to the Jewish people, but the one promise he has kept is to prevent any reform of the selection of judges so that you won't have this system where only left-wing judges are on the Supreme Court. He has blocked every attempt to change the selection process for judges on the Supreme Court. And so you have in Israel, the real rulers of Israel are the Israeli Supreme Court because Netanyahu protects them. The Israeli Knesset with a simple majority vote can change all of this and can save Israel from a Supreme Court that is destroying the Jewish homeland. But Netanyahu protects them. And no one on the right criticizes and no one on the right says anything against him. He's a nationalist prime minister. He's a right-wing prime minister. He's better than the left, they say. Baloney. Netanyahu was the one who surrendered Hebron, the city of our forefathers, of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the city of Meirat HaMachpelah, the cave of the patriarchs. He surrendered 97% of Hebron to the Muslim Nazi terrorists. He surrendered 13% more of Judea and Samaria during the Y agreements. He surrendered another 13% of Judea and Samaria to Arafat and the PLO Hamas Fatah Muslim Nazi terrorists. Both of those surrenders took place when Bill Clinton was president. So just so that you'll know, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton may be Secretary of State. She may appoint him as Secretary of State. But when the Clintons, God forbid, come back to the White House, as the polls now say that they're likely to do, if God forbid they return to the White House, we're going to return to the days where they're going to be actively and effectively pushing for surrender of Jewish land and I'm not going to say forcing because Israel doesn't have to give in and shouldn't give in, but pressuring Israel constantly to surrender her homeland and to surrender her territory. Everyone is giving Netanyahu a green light to be the cowardly, pathetic, appeasing, wimpy prime minister that he is. They're giving him a green light because nobody criticizes him from the right. Everybody just criticizes him from the left. All the criticism from the news media, is from the left. All the criticism from the politicians from the left. Everything is from the left. All the pressure is from the left. And so, and the people on the so-called right are giving him a green light to be everything that he is. To continue to freeze Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, not to strike Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, to expel Jews from Judea and Samaria, to protect Israel's radical left Supreme Court, which is destroying the Jewish homeland. All of this is getting a green light from all the political leaders and all the political activists in Israel, all of whom do not criticize Netanyahu, despite the fact that he's not a nationalist and not a right-winger, and what he's doing is hurting Israel and endangering Israel. And so JTF is so essential. We are filling a vacuum. And I'm hoping, again, I'm hoping that we somehow can create a situation where at least we'll have debates with people on these issues. I'd love to have debates. Again, I'd love to have debates in front of live audiences. And if people have ideas for that, I welcome ideas on how we can effectuate that. But I would like to have debates with people, and I'm talking about prominent people. I want to have debates with prominent people in front of live audiences. Anyway, we're trying to work something out. We'll see if it works out. We need your prayers. But in the meantime, we're the only voice of sanity on these issues. The only voice of sanity on Iran, on Jewish settlements, on Judea and Samaria, on the need to criticize Netanyahu because of the destructive policies that he's pursuing. We're the only voice of sanity that says that Netanyahu should not be giving billions of dollars. You just saw two videos that we just put up last night. He's giving billions of dollars to the Arab Muslim Nazis in Judea and Samaria who are slaughtering Jews. And he gives them free electricity, free water, free medicine, free education, free housing, free everything. Things the Jews never get. And so it's essential that our voice be heard. It's essential that we move on this issue. And we want our voice also to be heard in the political arena in the United States. We want to have debates on the presidential race in 2016. We want to debate those issues too with people who disagree with us in front of live audiences. We'd like to be able to do that because we want to influence the election. We don't want Hillary Clinton, God forbid, in the White House. If the Clintons return to the White House, we already know what a catastrophe that is. Israel's very survival will be in jeopardy. Aside from the fact that they'll destroy America. She's promising executive orders to completely open the borders, to give complete amnesty to all 20 to 30 million illegal aliens, to create automatic voting rights for anyone who reaches the age of 18. That'll lead to massive voter fraud. And I can go on and on and on. I mean, the things that she's promising to do would lead to the end of the United States of America. It's over. If they implement all those policies successfully, it is over. America is finished. And Israel's survival will be in grave jeopardy as well. So we want to debate these issues in front of live audiences. We want to, but in the meantime, whether we can do that successfully or not, whether we can pull that off or not, or whether people are too chicken to debate us, I don't know. But whether we can do that or not, what we do want to do is make sure that our voice is heard. You know that a lot of people have seen us on YouTube. We want many more. I mean, thousands is not enough. We want millions. But at least our voice is being heard. We're not allowed to be silent. And if we weren't there, no one would say the things that you're hearing on this program. No one. So we need you to do the following things since you're part of the JTF team. We need you to do the following things. Number one, we need your prayer. Please pray for our success. Number two, when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos like we did last night, for instance, one in Hebrew, one in English, when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, please promote those videos. Like them, favorite them, promote them, spread the word about them on YouTube, on Facebook, everywhere possible. Number three, join and participate and comment on our great news pages. If you don't speak Hebrew, then on the English news page, jtf.org. If you do speak Hebrew, then on both the English, jtf.org, and on the Hebrew news page, which is hayamin.org. Help us promote those news pages. That's very important. Every time you comment, every time you participate, every time you go to the news pages, you're strengthening our position in the search engines. And spread the word about it. Let other people know about it because we have news pages that are excellent. And number four, the fourth thing, of course, every check, every money order, every cash donation made out to JTF, obviously it helps. Obviously it makes a big difference. Every time that we get support from you financially, we're able to reach more people. We're able to do more good. So please, those that are supporting us, God bless you. Please continue. And those of you who are not yet supporting JTF, it's very important that our voice be heard. It's very important because no one is saying what we're saying, and what we're saying is so essential to making this a better world. If there are people that don't want to have to make out checks or money orders or cash donation, number four, obviously, checks, money orders, cash donations made out to our post office box are very helpful and make a big difference. Every time we get a contribution, it makes a difference. It helps us reach more people. Obviously, the stronger we are, the more people we can reach. The more money we get, the more support we get, the more people we can reach, the more good that we can do. If you prefer to make a check or money order or cash donation to our organization and send it to our post office box, that's wonderful and very helpful. Or alternatively, if you prefer to do it online, if you feel it's more convenient to do it online with your credit card, that's also just as good. Makes no difference to us whether you do it by regular mail to our post office box or whether you go online. If you want to go online, you go to the donate button in English, which is on the Hebrew main page. The Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. You go on top, there's a donate button in English. You click on the donate button, and in a couple of minutes, you can very conveniently contribute with your credit card to JTF's cause and to enable us to reach more people with our vital message. God bless the wonderful JTFers who are helping us, who are letting our message reach people, our essential message reach people. God bless you. You're doing a lot of good, and what we're doing is very important. It is very important that this message be heard. It's very important that this time we build up opposition from the right to Netanyahu's policies so that there'll be a true right wing in Israel for a change. It's very, very important that that happen, that there be a voice on the right. If JTF isn't there, there is no voice on the right. So what you're doing is very, very important. God bless the great JTFers who are generously helping us. So we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, and we need your help, and we got to work together as a team in order to make this happen. And let's hope that with the upcoming presidential campaign next year and with the things that we're planning to do to try to influence things in Israel, let's hope that we can make a real difference again to make this a better world. God willing. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. Let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, your thoughts on the following people." Okay, and I see four people here, all of whom are homosexuals. Okay, so I guess Wandering Samurai wants comments on these particular homosexual activists. They're all active in the homosexual cause, which is against the Bible and against what God commands us to do and against the laws of nature. So I think people know what our stand is on this issue, but let's run through these names and let's see who we're dealing with here. And we start out with George Takei. George Takei is a Japanese-American actor who was on Star Trek, and he's a homosexual activist. He's married to a self-hating Jew named Brad Altman. And he and Brad Altman, George Takei and Brad Altman, run around promoting the homosexual agenda. So they're promoting something that's very bad for society. The second name on the list is Michael Callan. Michael Callan is or was a homosexual musician who died of AIDS. I don't remember, I think it was 25 years ago, something like that. About 25 years ago, he died of AIDS. He was in his 30s. Just to show you what he was all about, he had a band called Low Life. That was the name of his band, Low Life. A very fitting name, because what he promoted in life was terrible and harmful to society. The third name on the list is Ricky Martin. Oh, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated. Not only is Ricky Martin a Puerto Rican homosexual with two sons that he got from a surrogate mother. I mean, he's a homosexual who wants to raise with his fellow homosexuals twin boys that he got from a surrogate mother, which, in my opinion, that is child abuse. When homosexuals adopt children, when homosexuals raise children, adopt children, or bring children into this world, that, in my opinion, is child abuse. No child can be raised well or raised in a normal fashion when his parents are a homosexual so-called couple. But that's what Ricky Martin did. But in addition to his being fighting for the homosexual agenda and for the things that he's done in terms of children, aside from that, he is a vicious Jew-hating piece of filth, the lowest, most vicious type of Jew-hating scum. He supports the Arab Muslim terrorists. He has attended and done fundraising for organizations that work to destroy Israel and exterminate the Jewish people. Arab terrorist front groups that work to destroy the Jewish people. He held up a map of all of Israel destroyed. All of Israel, Palestine. The whole state of Israel disappeared and became Palestine. In other words, this Jewish state, the Jewish people wiped off the face of the earth. Ricky Martin posed in a picture holding up that map. So this is a Nazi piece of filth. Yimach shmo v'zichro, shem reshaim yirkav, may his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. And the fourth person on the list is Michael Stipe. He's another homosexual singer who promotes immorality. What a tragedy that this type of immorality is being promoted now by so many people. It's a tragic commentary on our society. And something that is obviously very displeasing to the creator of the universe. These people are fighting with God. And let me tell you something, when you fight with God, you have zero chance of winning. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think is the greatest moment in the history of the modern state of Israel? Thanks, unquote. There are a lot of them. I think probably the greatest was the 1967 Six-Day War. In 6 days, tiny little Israel quadrupled in size, became four times her original size in just 6 days. And she was outnumbered 100-1. Outnumbered 100-1? With the whole world against you? And you quadruple in size, you become four times your original size in a 6 day war? Defeating your enemies on every front, on the northern front, the southern front, on every border. What an unbelievable miracle of biblical proportions. The greatest miracle for the Jewish people in thousands of years. I think that was the greatest moment. There were many others. I think another great moment in Israel's history was when Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, our great leader, Moreinu VeRabbeinu, our great teacher, and our great rabbi, Rabbi Kahana, was elected to the Knesset. Finally, someone was representing in the parliament of Israel what the Jews are supposed to be, was finally speaking the way the Jewish people are supposed to speak in accordance with what God says in the Bible, to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. So that was another great moment in Israel's history. So I would say the Six-Day War, 1967, and not far behind was that wonderful period when Rabbi Kahana was actually serving in the Israeli Knesset. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, one tiny sliver of defense for FDR Jews. FDR meaning Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In this era when many Republicans were Ron Paul-type isolationists or American firsters who favored no action whatsoever against Hitler in any way. In an hypothetical election between FDR and a quote, patriotic conservative, unquote, who advocated doing nothing at all about Nazism, which is the lesser of the evils, unquote. Well, you know, I mean, that's unfortunately something that we're often thrown into situations like that where you've got to choose lesser of the evils. First of all, let me just remind everybody, though, that when there is a choice between lesser of the evils, the lesser of the evils is still evil. There was actually a major American politician, Lewinsky Stinks, who represented what you're talking about, who was against doing anything against Hitler, was even against sending any assistance to the British that were under attack by Nazi Germany. Any assistance whatsoever. He wanted complete neutrality because privately they supported Hitler and the Nazis, because they were Nazis themselves, or a lot of their supporters were. And I'm referring to Ohio Senator Robert Taft, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. He opposed any effort against Hitler at all until Pearl Harbor. Then when Pearl Harbor came, he didn't have a choice. But he was against any action at all against Hitler. A complete isolationist. He was like the Ron Paul, Rand Paul traitors of today. And after the war, even after the war, this Nazi pig, Robert Taft, who today is the hero of certain organizations, you know, the Pat Buchanan types, and the Ron Paul types, and the Rand Paul types. Robert Taft, after World War II, condemned the Nuremberg trials against the Nazi war criminals. He said, we shouldn't get revenge against the Nazi war criminals who murdered 6 million Jews and murdered many, many other people, many other innocent people. We shouldn't have Nuremberg trials against these monsters who committed the worst crimes in human history. He said, that's not what we should do. We shouldn't be vengeful. I mean, what an obvious piece of garbage. And he became the Republican Senate Majority Leader. He was elected Senate Majority Leader. And he nearly won the 1952 Republican presidential nomination. It was actually a close contest in 1952 between him and Dwight Eisenhower. Dwight Eisenhower was also a terrible candidate and a terrible president. But Robert Taft was by far the worst. He wanted to run against Roosevelt. So it's not just an academic thing. He actually ran in 1940 for the Republican presidential nomination. In a race between Roosevelt and Robert Taft, I would say that Robert Taft is even worse than Roosevelt. Although it's hard to get worse than Roosevelt because Roosevelt did everything possible to allow the German Nazis to murder 6 million Jews. Everything possible. Refused to bomb the rail lines leading to the death camps, refused to bomb the death camps themselves, closed the doors to any Jews trying to escape, supported the British policy of closing the doors to the land of Israel, did everything possible to make sure that as many Jews as possible would be murdered by the Nazis. And that was literally Roosevelt's policy. And by the way, it was Winston Churchill's policy. Winston Churchill, whom we're told is such a great leader nowadays, he did the same thing. So, as bad and as terrible as he was, Robert Taft actually would have been even worse, believe it or not. Because the United States would have had a very hard time winning World War II if America had listened to all that Robert Taft, the senator from Ohio, had advocated, completely doing nothing and preparing, making no preparation for any war against Hitler or the Japanese, nothing. It would have been a catastrophe. So I would say, in that very rare situation, FDR would have been a lesser of the evils, but not by much, because he did so many terrible things, not by much. And again, that's a nightmare scenario. The nightmare then was the Holocaust, and we could face a nightmare scenario in the election next year, which is why we've got to act. If Hillary Clinton gets elected, that's a nightmare. If Hillary Clinton runs against Jeb Bush or Rand Paul or Chris Christie or one of these other terrible candidates, that's also a nightmare scenario. That's why it's so important that JTF succeed in promoting what we want to promote. Of course, we support Ted Cruz. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, the mayors I asked about last show, other than Lupolyansky, ruled before 1967 when the eastern part of the city was in Jordanian hands. How can these mayors be criticized for not building Jewish homes in those areas?" Unquote. You know, Binyamin, I don't remember. I didn't remember that. I thought you also, or maybe I'm mixing it up with another show that maybe with 2 weeks ago, but I thought you also included Ehud Olmert and some other, Teddy Kollek and some other mayors that were post-1967. If last week you were only including pre-67 mayors, of course, pre-1967 mayors can't be criticized for not building in the eastern part of the city. That is true. And then you asked, two, what did those mayors do in regards to the city being divided? Unquote. I don't think they really did much. They just ruled the city and carried out their municipal responsibilities. I don't think they carried them out well because I don't think socialism works, and Jerusalem and Israel have been ruled by socialist governments. But I don't think they did much about the city being divided. Three, who was the lesser of the evils of all Jerusalem mayors? Unquote. That, I don't know, very hard to say. I don't know enough about every single mayor to say that. It's pretty hard to say. I can tell you, though, that I think that all the mayors of Jerusalem, including the ones before 1967, have done what all the politicians in Israel do. They've created a bloated bureaucracy and bloated government filled with corruption, and they have failed to address the need to give Jewish values and Judaism to every Jewish student in the education system. That's something a mayor can potentially influence. They were not voices for those things. They were certainly not moral voices on moral issues. So I think all of them are guilty in that regard. There's never been a mayor of Jerusalem that you could say, wow, this guy spoke up. This guy told us about the danger of having so many Arabs living here that want to destroy us. This guy told us about the lack of moral values for Jewish students and how we have to give Jewish education to Jewish students. This guy tried to end the bureaucracy and all the problems and all the socialism and all the problems that are destroying the economy and making it difficult for the country to progress. You can't say that about any of these mayors or about any of the politicians in Israel. I just don't see it. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion of the recent Supreme Court Israeli passport decision," unquote. Okay. For those of you who don't know, the Supreme Court recently ruled, I think it was 6-3, that Israelis who were born in Jerusalem cannot have on their passport, I'm talking about Israelis who live in the United States, they can have on their passport listed the fact that they were born in Israel. Jerusalem is not part of Israel, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. You know what I think the most interesting part of this decision is? The three Jews on the Supreme Court all voted against Israel. All voted that Jerusalem is not part of Israel. Look at these filthy, low-life, Judenrat pieces of filth. Yimach shmam v'zichram shem reshaim yirkav. Look at these low-life, animal, self-hating Judenrat Jews on the U.S. Supreme Court. Look what scum they are. Three out of the nine Supreme Court justices are Jewish. Three out of nine Supreme Court justices, one-third of the Supreme Court of the United States, is Jewish. Even though America is maybe 1% Jewish. Maybe America's population may be 1% Jewish. Maybe some people would say 1.5% because they include all types of self-hating Jews who halachically may not even be Jewish anymore. But 1%, 1.5%. But the Supreme Court is one-third Jewish, three out of nine. And all three Supreme Court justices ruled against Israel. I mean, what further proof do you need that the best thing we could do would be to say that Jews aren't allowed to serve on the court or in politics in the United States? It would be the best thing for Israel. All of these stupid Jews who are so anxious to say, oh, I want a Jew. I want him as a senator because he's a Jew. I'd like to see him on the Supreme Court. He's a Jew. After all, he's a Jew. He'll help us. I mean, how unbelievably stupid can people be? 99% of the Jews that get into positions of influence outside of Israel use that influence against their own people to bend over backwards and show, I'm not loyal to Israel. I'm not loyal to the Jews. When will we learn? When will we learn? I mean, how foolish can people be? And you even have Jews, you know, last week I did on my opening, I talked about Michael Bloomberg, God forbid, running for president, which there's been some discussion of that he would challenge Hillary. I have my doubts that he'll do it, but that he would challenge Hillary for the Democrat nomination. I mean, if things really fall apart for her, it's possible. And you know, that would excite so many idiotic Jews in this country. Can you imagine what a nightmare it would be to have Michael Bloomberg, that self-hating, intermarried, left-wing, Bolshevik, multi-billionaire Jew sitting in the White House? Do you have any idea what that would mean for the Jewish people? And talk about anti-Semitism and hatred that would create. Oh, it would be unbelievable what a danger that would be for the Jewish people. And yet so many Jews would get excited over that. So many Jews vote for the Jewish politicians. I always vote against the Jewish politicians. And this Supreme Court decision is just another example of the infamy of these cowardly, evil, assimilated, embarrassed, self-hating Jews that get into positions of influence outside of Israel. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And only JTF will say what you just heard. What you just heard me say, no one says except for us. Which is another reason why we're so important. Because, again, we're the only voice of truth on these issues. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to Rashi, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, opinion, please, that Dagan and Ashkenazi refused orders from Netanyahu to hit Iran's nuclear program in 2010, unquote. Yeah, and it's true. What you're saying is true. Netanyahu was seriously considering striking Iran's nuclear bomb-making program in 2010, which would have really given a new hope to Israel and would have saved Israel from this terrible tragedy. It might also have led to the defeat of Barack Hussein Obama for re-election in 2012. It's possible. I don't want to go into all the details, but just because of time constraints, but it could have, potentially. In any event, Netanyahu wanted to do this, and the head of the Mossad, which is supposed to be the Israeli CIA, the Israeli spy agency, the head of the Mossad, Meir Dagan, Yemach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Rashaim Yirkav, may his name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. Meir Dagan, this leftist, arrogant, filthy, disgusting, cowardly piece of filth, piece of subhuman excrement, this animal said he would refuse to participate and refuse to obey orders. And then he said, and I'll resign or I'll refuse. Just made all types of threats. And Netanyahu, of course, collapsed as usual. Ashkenazi was the Ramatkal. Ramatkal means the chief of staff of Tzahal, of the Israeli army. He also was refusing. I mean, what type of prime minister puts up with this? But this is what happens when you appoint leftist traitor scum to all the key positions. And that's what Netanyahu did. So when he possibly wanted to finally act, he was in this situation. They boxed him into a corner. Now, of course, he could have removed these two cowardly traitors, and he could have forced the issue and just done it as prime minister, and nobody could have stopped him. Menachem Begin didn't have this problem, and neither did Ehud Olmert when Ehud Olmert destroyed Syria's nuclear program, and when Menachem Begin did it in Iraq. He didn't ask for permission. They just did what had to be done as prime minister, and that's it. And the prime minister has the power to do these things. And if anybody objects or bucks his policies on this, you throw them out. You remove them. And you replace them with people who are loyal to Israel. But yes, this report is true, and these guys are bragging about what they did in 2010. So it is true. Thank you, Rashi. And by the way, the blood of millions of Jews may God forbid someday be on their hands if Iran gets nuclear bombs. God forbid. Thank you, Rosh, and on the hands of Netanyahu and all of his supporters who are sitting back and tolerating his inaction on this issue. Again, thank you, Rashi, and we go to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Chaim Shalom, we pray for your mom, how is she doing, unquote. Baruch Hashem, We're going to watch and monitor, and she's going to get checkups every 3 months, four times a year. She's got to get checkups. God willing, we hope that the cancer will not recur. Unfortunately, it's an aggressive cancer that often does recur in many patients. So we hope, God willing, that she, in her case, that won't happen. And we need your prayers, and I appreciate very much your prayers for Malka Bat Simcha. Guns N' Roses fan now asks my question, what is the difference between Shiites and Sunnis? May Hashem bless you, Edward, unquote. Okay, a good question. The Shiite and Sunni Muslims. Of course, both of them are nuts. And Islam itself the whole religion is nuts. The whole religion's an insane religion, man-made, crazy religion from a lunatic who wanted to justify his mass murder, his hatred, his conquests, his massive raping and pedophilia and all the other terrible things that this monster Muhammad did. The Sunnis are about 90% of the Muslims. The Shiites are most of the other 10%. It's roughly 90 to 10. There are other little factions of Islam, but if you want to break it down between these two groups, it would be like 90% to 10%, very roughly. The Sunnis, again, being the bigger group. Both of them are terrorists. Both of them want to destroy all non-Muslim infidels. And now, thankfully, some of them are killing each other, which is thankfully, Baruch Hashem, let's hope that that continues. One of the big differences, I'll just mention one very big difference here. One of the big differences between these two factions, I'll mention one unique thing about each of them. The Shiites, you know, believe that they have to beat themselves until they're bleeding. Did you ever see the pictures of the Shiites beating themselves until they're bleeding? They believe they have to bleed and their children have to be bleeding. I mean, their backs are all full of blood dripping down their backs. They beat themselves in this masochistic frenzy. It's part of the rituals of the crazy Shiite Islamic, the Shiite the Muslims. Just insane. I mean, they beat themselves and torture themselves physically. That's one of the things the Shiites do. It's one of the characteristics of the Shiites. And they even cut with swords and with knives, and they cut into their babies and their children and make their babies and children bleed also. They're almost making themselves into human sacrifices almost. They don't kill themselves, but they torture themselves and cause themselves tremendous pain and suffering. That's one of the aspects of Shiite Islam. Completely insane religion. Sunni Islam, to show one of its aspects, they believe everything is preordained. Everything is completely preordained. Allah decides everything in advance. It's all preordained. Now, if that's true, that means there's no free will. So why do you punish people who do wrong, and why do you reward people who do good? Why, you shouldn't have to reward or punish anybody. Why are there commandments at all in the Quran telling people what they should do and ordering people? Doesn't make any sense. Because the Sunni Muslim, according to the Sunni Muslims, Allah decides in advance what everything that's going to be. If that's all true, and that is their belief system, if that's all true, then why would Allah have to tell anybody to do anything? It's all pre-decided and predetermined, and there's no free will. That's the crazy Sunni belief. So, both of these factions, insane, illogical, irrational, contradictory, just completely nuts. Completely nuts, and of course, the one good thing is now they're killing each other. Ken yirbu. Ken yirbu means there should be much more of this. It should, they should kill each other on a much greater scale, Bezrat Hashem, instead of killing innocent people. Thank you, Edward. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Thanks, JTF. My friend refused to convert to Islam and married his beloved despite death threats from her Nigerian father. They are now happy and free, unquote. Oh, I'm very happy to hear that. I'm very happy to hear that. Hiram asked me about this case, and it sounds like it ended off very well. Thank you very much, Hiram. I'm very happy to hear that. I'm very happy to hear that. We go now to Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, NYPD, New York Police Department, wants to ramp up the number of Muslim police officers. Is New York doomed, unquote? Oh, of course it's doomed. New York is a joke. New York is such a radical left Bolshevik city. Two-thirds non-white, by the way, the population. And the one-third that's white, majority of them are leftists, are just insane. I mean, it's a horrible place. I mean, New York City voted 81% for Barack Hussein Obama in 2012. 81% for Barack Hussein Obama. Now, how is a city like that going to have any hope? Of course, it's doomed. Now they want Muslim police officers. Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, that works out. That works out very well. Now, of course, the Muslim police officers pass over information that to the terrorists and to criminals and to others that is useful to them and compromise whatever law enforcement the police department wants to do. And the NYPD thinks that's a good idea, putting more traitor so-called police officers like that on the force. Of course, it's insane. It's just insane. Thank you, Da Vinci. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, what is JTF doing for the Jewish students on campus who are being maligned by anti-Semites and BDS movement, which is growing? How do YouTube videos help, unquote? Okay. I don't think the BDS movement and what's going on campuses is as big an issue. You know, there's a limit to how much we can do because, you know, there's just a limit to what we can do. But it is not, for us, it is not the burning issue facing the Jewish people today. When you have Iran on the verge of building nuclear bombs, when you have freezing of Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem, and the danger, the constant danger of a so-called Palestinian state being built in everything but name. When you have Jewish homes being torn down in Judea and Samaria and Jews being expelled from their homes. When you have Jews in Israel not receiving the Jewish education they need to have Jewish values. Those are the big issues of our day. Those are the really biggest issues of our day. As far as people who want to boycott Israel, you know, we have a saying. It's from the Torah. You know, it says in the Torah, "Am levadad yishkon, uvagoyim lo yitchashav," which means this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. In other words, when we're alone and isolated, it's actually good for Israel. Now, I know that this goes against all the instincts of all the crazy Jews out there that are so desperate to be loved and accepted by everybody. They so desperately want allies and diplomatic relations for Israel and more diplomatic recognition. The fact is, when Israel is alone and doesn't care about that and does what's right, like in the 1967 Six-Day War or in the 1948 War of Independence, in 1948, the United States told Israel, Harry Truman, whom everybody says was pro-Israel, that anti-Semite Harry Truman, yimach shmo, he tried to prevent Israel from coming into being. And he and George Marshall, who was the Secretary of State, told Israel told Ben-Gurion and all these socialist leaders not to declare a Jewish state. They did in the end under pressure from the Irgun and the Stern Group, the two Jewish underground groups. And if those two underground groups hadn't existed, they wouldn't have declared a Jewish state. But in any event, Israel ignored the whole world and declared a Jewish state in 1948, despite the fact that the world said, no, don't do that. We're not ready. Don't accept it. The Arab world doesn't accept it. You shouldn't do it. You can't do it. Israel ignored the world. And this is when Israel had nothing, no support, nothing, was a tiny country of 600,000, just 600,000 people, hopelessly outnumbered, hopelessly outgunned, and they ignored the world and declared a Jewish state. If, God forbid, they hadn't done that, where would we be today? And the same thing in 1967, when all the Arab armies marched on Israel's borders, promising to push the Jews into the sea, and Lyndon Johnson threatened Israel. President Lyndon Johnson said, don't you dare strike first, don't you dare take action. And Levi Eshkol, a socialist prime minister, ignored Johnson and did strike first. And look at the great results of the Six-Day War in 1967. It was the greatest miracle that the Jewish people have seen in thousands of years. Because Israel, while it was alone, and by the way, 1967, France threatened Israel, Charles de Gaulle in France threatened Israel. They cut off all arms shipments to Israel. France, before that, had been selling weapons to Israel. All of that was cut off. The French cut off all arms shipments. The Soviets broke diplomatic relations. All the Eastern European countries broke diplomatic relations. The United States threatened Israel. There was an arms embargo from the United States against Israel. All of this against Israel. Israel was completely isolated. The whole world was against them. And they struck first anyway. And look at the magnificent, breathtaking results. When Israel is alone, it's a Kiddush Hashem. It's sanctifying God's name, because then you can't say, well, you won because of America. You won because of this one or that one. When Israel is alone and wins, that's a Kiddush Hashem. That's sanctifying God's name. Because then you see that it was God's hand that enabled this victory. You see it more clearly. So the great results for Israel are when Israel is alone and Israel defies the world. That's when Israel wins great victories, miraculous victories. That's when God intervenes for us. Am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yitchashev. That was supposed to be a curse. Bilam wanted to curse the Jewish people. And so he said, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. You're going to be isolated. He was the first BDS activist, Bilam. And he cursed the Jews in the Torah. And God's turned that curse into the biggest blessing. When Israel does have the support of countries in the world, like they did in the Lebanon War, the Second Lebanon War, they can't defeat a ragtag group of Arab terrorists even, because then they're depending on other countries and they're worried about public opinion and they can't do this and they can't do that and their hands are tied. And then they have no hope of winning. Even when they Israel had the superior technology, the superior numbers, all the odds in Israel's favor in the Lebanon war and couldn't win, in the war in Gaza and couldn't win, despite the fact that all the odds were in Israel's favor. Israel cannot win when she worries about world opinion and worries about pleasing the world. Israel's incapable of winning unless Israel says, we're going to do what we have to do. We're not interested in who it offends or doesn't offend right now. We're going to do what we have to do to survive, and we'll explain what we did afterwards. But first, we're going to do what we have to do. So that is what we want to explain to the Jewish people. Not begging people not to boycott us. Screw them if they want to boycott us. Screw them. And Jewish college students shouldn't be on college campuses in America. They should make aliyah. That is not the biggest issue for the Jewish people. I'm sorry. I know American Jews don't like to hear that because they think they're the center of the universe. They're not. Israel is the center for the Jewish people, not America. And so that is not, with the limited resources we have and the limited time we have, we're not going to worry about Jews on college campuses and the BDS movement. That is a minor issue compared to these existential threats that Israel's facing from a nuclear Iran, or from losing Judea and Samaria, or from the Jewish settlements being frozen, or from the fact that Bibi's policies are enriching and allowing the Arab population in Israel to grow. Those are the big issues that are important. These other issues which the Jews always focus on because they want so badly to be loved and accepted, these are relatively minor issues. Thank you, Dr. Dan. Although I will say this, the facts that we present in our videos and the truth that we present, if it was presented on a massive scale, there'd be a lot less. Jews, at least on college campuses, would at least know how to answer when someone says something against Israel. They'd at least know what the answers are. Right now, they don't get any answers. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, one, please pray for Israeli filmmaker Ronit Elkabetz, Yamach Shema V'Zichra, to die of terminal cancer, unquote. Okay, well, I don't know enough about her to say that, except that I do think you probably, I'm almost sure you have a good reason for that, Smash Islam, because if she gets awards from Israeli filmmakers and from the Israeli entertainment industry, who are the worst self-hating Jews, the worst Jewish anti-Semites imaginable, they support all the enemies of their own people, they're against the Jewish state, they're against all Jewish rights, and support all of the most vicious Nazi mass murderers. So if she's so popular among them, and she is, and she gets so many awards from them, and I know she gets awards from them, she must be pretty bad. I don't know the details with her, and I don't know the details with her. I haven't seen her films, and I don't know that, as far as I know, and I don't see the detail. I don't know the details of her situation, but if she's popular with them, that's got to be very bad news. That means she's got to be a very rotten, evil person, because they only honor rotten, evil people. Smash Islam also writes, too, a Bukharian Jewish dancer, Sabrina Kalantorov, born male, Arthur, unquote. Well, that's very sick. Oh, there's so many sick things that go on in the world today. It's just, you know, years ago, you know, when I was a kid, that if a man wanted to dress like a woman, he'd be arrested right away. You know, it was illegal. It was illegal for a man to dress like a woman. And we had morals. And even in super liberal New York City, do you know that in the 1960s in liberal New York City, it was against the law to serve liquor to a homosexual? If someone was a homosexual, you weren't allowed to serve liquor to them. I mean, there were so many, and this is in super left-wing New York City. And that's how much the world has changed, how much we've seen the deterioration. Now, the bigger a freak that someone is, the more of a hero they are to the media. The more of a freak someone is, the more the media likes them. It's incredible. You know, even as little as 10 or 20 years ago, most of the homosexuals didn't like the transgender, and they were embarrassed by them because it's so weird looking. Now, they're the big heroes. Bruce Jenner and all the other insanity that we've seen, they're the big heroes now. When you allow society to go down morally, there is no end. It is, as Rabbi Kahana, our great leader, said, it is a slippery slope and everything goes down. And the day is going to come when they're going to be promoting marriage between human beings and animals. And the day is going to come when they're going to be, and pedophilia and all these other evil things. It's, all of this is going to be promoted too. All of this is coming too. It's just, it's unbelievable. That's why we have to be a moral voice to stand against all of this. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, Kahana always broadcasted his political intentions. Is it a virtue to always be open with the public, or is stealth in politics acceptable at times, unquote? There are times when there has to be stealth, yes. But in the case of Rabbi Kahana, it was not advantageous, because the Jewish people have been fed so many lies and so many falsehoods and so many insane concepts that there had to be one honest person who gets up and tells the truth in an uncompromising way. There had to be. And that's the role Rabbi Kahana played, and it's the role we in JTF want to play as well. That's because of the situation of Jews being so lied to and so misled, you have to have at least one voice of truth. Rabbi Kahana was the only voice of truth. And unfortunately, this is the world we live in, where you don't have other voices. And so you have to have at least one voice that tells the pure truth and has the courage to stand up even when it's unpopular, to stand up for what's right. Thank you, PMN. We go now to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, please comment on Rav Mesas. I think you're referring to Harav David Mesas, who was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. He was also chief rabbi in Geneva and Paris. I don't know enough about him, Tag Mechir. I'm sorry. And then Tag Mechir asks about Rav Uziel. There are actually a number of famous Rabbi Uziels. You'd have to probably be more specific about that. I don't know who you're referring to. There's Harav Uziel, a couple of them from several hundred years ago that were famous rabbinic scholars. If you're referring to someone more recently, I don't know exactly who you're referring to, Tag Mechir. More recently, you have to be more specific because there are several. And Tag Mechir now writes about Harav Kook. Okay, Harav Kook was an extremely influential force in Judaism. He believed in the creation of a Jewish state. He believed in the return of the Jewish people to the Jewish homeland. All of that, very, very good. And he wrote many things that were very, very important about that. A lot of things he wrote were very wise and very profound in regard to the return of the Jewish people to their homeland. Unfortunately, he also believed that we have to love all of our fellow Jews, including the worst, most evil traitors. And that led to the Kook supporters supporting David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann and all these traitors that did such terrible things to the Jewish people. So, you know, the fact that when someone preaches love, 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 love all the time with everybody, that you have to love everybody, that can be I think that's a very problematic situation. Also, I think Rabbi Kook, Harav Kook, so much emphasized the importance of a Jewish state and how much we're supposed to love a Jewish state, which we should, that there wasn't the distinction made between a Jewish state and the Jewish government. And so his supporters today worship the Israeli government, worship the Israeli army, worship these other institutions that do terrible things to the Jewish people many times. There's a difference between the Jewish state, which is holy and sacred. The concept of a Jewish state, of Jewish sovereignty in Judea, not only in Judea and Samaria, but throughout the land of Israel, the concept of Jewish sovereignty and a Jewish state, that is sacred. That is absolutely holy and sacred. But the concept of the Israeli government is not politicians, corrupt politicians that are doing terrible things to the Jewish people. That's anything but sacred. And that distinction was never clearly made. On the contrary, Harav Kook's son and others, you know, they supported and worked with prime ministers and leaders who did terrible things to the Jewish people over the years. And I think that was one of the really bad problems, one of the areas where we have a major difference. And Tag Mechir Tzedek now writes, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Harav Tzvi Pesach Frank was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. The only thing I know about him is that his son became a Knesset member from the Socialist Labor Party. So that's certainly not good. Beyond that, I don't know very much about him. You know, the establishment rabbis, the ones who become chief rabbi, the establishment guys, they're not my cup of tea, Tag Mechir. They're not my cup of tea. Okay, they tend to do what the establishment tells them to do. And I don't think that's good for the Jewish people, generally speaking. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And we go now to Paper Cut, who writes, and I quote, "One, God bless your mother, Chaim. I know what it is like for a relative to have cancer," unquote. I'm sorry to hear that, Paper Cut, and I certainly wish for a refuah shlema, complete recovery for any of your relatives who may have had that problem. They should never have that problem again, God willing. Paper Cut now writes, "Two, is Rachel Dolezal demon-possessed or just retarded?" Unquote. Rachel Dolezal, I don't know if it's Dolezal or Dolezal or whatever her name is, Dolezal, let me assume it's Dolezal. That's the head of the NAACP chapter who pretended she was black. What happened to white privilege? I thought everybody wants to be white because we discriminate in favor of whites. There's white privilege. Isn't that what we've been told and led to believe? The fact is there is black privilege in America for at least 50 years. America is a racist country that discriminates against white people, against Asians, against Jews. America discriminates in favor of blacks and Arabs and Muslims and certain select groups. And the discrimination in favor of blacks has taken place for 50 years now. It's called affirmative action. And it is across the board discrimination in every area. Blacks who are unqualified get jobs. Blacks who are unqualified get promotions. Blacks who do terrible things on the job and are completely incompetent and are hurting their companies are never fired. Blacks get into the best and most prestigious universities when they need remedial reading courses because they're semi-literate, meaning they're partially illiterate, and they get into Harvard and Yale. So there is blatant, flagrant discrimination of the worst type in favor of black people. And she, I guess she wanted to get some of that. She wanted to pass for black. She wanted to get all the benefits of being black. Just like Elizabeth Warren, that phony communist senator from Massachusetts, she wanted to be an American Indian because of affirmative action. She listed herself as American Indian. Jeb Bush lists himself as Hispanic on the census figure. He puts himself, he's not Hispanic at all. But he listed himself as Hispanic. What is all of this about? Because it's a disadvantage to be white. It's a disadvantage. And certainly a big disadvantage to be Jewish or Asian or other groups that achieve above average. A big disadvantage in American society. Because this is a country that now rewards laziness and jealousy and hatred and low IQs. That's what America now rewards. And so she wanted to, she wanted to get the benefits of that. She's a disgusting person in every respect. But you see here that the real discrimination here is has not been against black people for at least 50 years. The opposite. The discrimination is in their favor. Thank you, Paper Cut. And we go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss what you believe are Ted Cruz's positions on the following. One, Obama trade. Two, immigration." On Obama trade, unfortunately, Ted Cruz supported the trade bill that was in front of the Congress. He supported it. We disagree with Ted Cruz on that issue. He apparently thinks that free trade is going to benefit the United States and so on and so forth. I think it's a threat to American sovereignty. I disagree with him on that issue. I still think his positions on other issues, on most of the other issues, 80% of the other issues, let's put it that way, are good. So I still think we should support him for president, but I disagree with the stand that he took on Obama trade. that should have been voted down and should be voted down, and all of these trade agreements. I think all of these trade agreements that they come up with have been bad, and I'm personally against all of them. EB22 now writes to immigration. On the issue of illegal immigration and amnesty, he's against it. And he's the one candidate who is most consistent on that issue. He says he favors legal immigration, which I happen to disagree with him on that too. I don't think there should be, I think there shouldn't be legal or illegal. I think it should stop. I think there should be a complete moratorium on all immigration. And that people should actually be deported and sent back. All the illegals and people that are here that are not citizens, they should be deported and sent back. That's the only way you're going to save America. He doesn't take that stand, but at least he's against amnesty. And so his positions on the issue of immigration, in my opinion, is the best of all of the candidates running. Thank you, EB22. We go now to Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, thoughts of Richard Allen and his JCC watch. Okay, now let's start with that. Well, I'm glad that Richard Allen started the JCC Watch, JCC being the Jewish establishment, the JCC, the UJA Federation, that they support traitors like the New Israel Fund. No, I'm glad that he's exposing the fact that Jewish establishment fundraising organizations, when you give to them, you're supporting the worst traitors. They support all the people that work against Israel. I mean, that's what you're supporting. And he is exposing this. So I think that that's positive. I'm glad that he's doing that. He also lists certain establishment groups that he supports, that he continues to support. That I don't like. I think that's a mistake. He mentions that he supports other Jewish establishment groups. You know, I think because he's trying to show, you see, I'm not against all of you. You know, this constant desire to show how objective and bend over backwards and, you know. So I think there's good and bad in what he's doing. You know, when he says he supports other Jewish establishment groups, the Jewish establishment in general is bad and rotten and has to be replaced by self-respecting, God-fearing Jews. It is rotten through and through and has to be replaced completely. It's not one rotten apple. It's the whole barrel is rotten when it comes to the Jewish establishment organizations. But he is exposing JCC and the UJA Federation. UJA is the United Jihad Appeal, and that I certainly praise him for. Imaknik now writes, opinion of Mike Huckabee's support of child molesters, unquote. Well, I don't think Mike Huckabee supports child molesters in all fairness. He is defending this Duggar teenage kid. You know, what he did was pretty disgusting, but he's friendly with the Duggar family, and he's trying to say that there's a double standard here. Obviously, what this Duggar kid did was terrible and is something that shouldn't be done. I think he was 13 or 14 years old when it happened. Still, you don't do those things. But if this was not an evangelical Christian family, I guarantee you the news media would never, never, never make an issue of this. The news media supports child molesters. The news media supported Michael Jackson, who was a child molester. The news media supported Bill Clinton, who is a rapist. The news media supports all of these. The news media supports Islam. You're not allowed to say anything about Islam. The ultimate child molester was Muhammad, the founder of Islam. A guy who was 54 or 55 years old and married a six-year-old girl, Aisha, and had sex with her when she was 9 years old. I mean, if that's not child molesting, then I don't know what is. The news media supports the gay child molesters. Any homosexual parents, so-called, who adopt children, that is child abuse. To raise children in that type of home, that is child abuse. So the media, there's no question, there is a double standard with the media, and I think that's what Mike Huckabee and some of the evangelical Christians are upset about, justifiably. But we can't, of course, we can't, just because of that, we can't justify what happened in this case. And I don't think Mike Huckabee, I didn't see his whole statement, or I don't remember exactly what he said, but I don't think he justified the action itself. I don't think he did. God forbid, I hope not. Thank you, Imaknik. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.